Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Tyke. A favorite Lake Effect tradition at this time of year is our annual Games to Gift segment, featuring contributor and hobby and game writer James Lauder. He's here again this year for our fourth annual list of perfect presents for game enthusiasts and casual players on your list. He joins Lake Effect's Stephanie Lecce and tells her what's new in the games world this year.
It's been a very interesting year. The one thing I've noticed is the huge number of fantastic card games that have come out. Depending on the year, you'll see great miniatures games, you'll see great role-playing games, you'll see great board games. This is sort of the year of fantastic card games.
Well, so what do we have on the list this year? What have you picked out for us to check out?
Well, for card games, we had talked about Cards Against Humanity last year as sort of the gift to give people who are into that dark side of things. There's a card game called Evil Baby Orphanage that you could give as a follow-up gift to the same folks. You travel through time and snatch babies and try to get them reformed before they become evil overlords later. So you go and you grab Jim Jones and Genghis Khan and things like that. And then you run the orphanage where you try to get them pacified with different toys and things like that. And then sort of on the same spirit of chaos, there's a great little card game called Boss Monster for fans of the side-scrolling video games of the 80s, where you play the boss monster in a dungeon and you're trying to create the most appealing side-scrolling dungeon to lure in adventurers so you can kill them. And so you put treasures in and different things like that to get the heroes to come and venture into your dungeon so you can bushwhack them. For sort of a 180-degree turn on that, there's a brilliant game called Hanabi, which is a cooperative game where players are working together to build the most magnificent, the most impressive fireworks display. One of the neat parts about that is you're playing blind with your cards. The other players at the table can see your cards. You cannot.
Oh.
So you're working together with that sort of limitation to get the cards in the right order and make the best fireworks display. That one and Boss Monster have been incredibly successful, very popular, especially in the last couple of months as they've started to catch on. And they're pretty difficult to get right now. Both of those could have been my pick of the year for card games, but I actually kind of went in a different direction. There's a service called Drive-Through Cards, which does print-on-demand for card games. So you avoid the problems that you have with games like Hanabi and Boss Monster right now, so you can't get them. You go to Drive-Through, you order the cards, they print them off on this really great card stock, poker deck card stock, and they ship them to you. And one of the games that's using that service this year is a game called Koi Pond. And in Koi Pond, you and the other players are collecting koi, and you can put them in your pond outside, which is public. Everybody can see what's there. Or you can hide them in your house. And you go through the different rounds, and after a certain point, you tally up suits and assign points based on what you've got hidden, what your totals are. Cards you discard work their way back through your discard river into the central lake where they'll be drawn again. It's gorgeous art. It's a really fine mechanic. It's got a lot of strategy to it, but it's light enough that really it's accessible to just about everybody.
I wonder if that service, that kind of print-on-demand service, isn't becoming more popular these days with card games, because I've seen that for other games as well.
Absolutely. It's role-playing games and card games especially are using it. There is a company down a little south of Milwaukee, Popcorn Press, that is using Drive-Through as well for their MonsterCon card game, which is a really fun trick-taking card game where you are at a horror convention, except you're a real monster. You're not in costume, and you're trying not to be discovered as the real monster so the convention goers don't mob you at the end of the con.
Well, you mentioned this local company here. Are there other Wisconsin game makers on the list this year?
There are. Our top two party game choices this year are from one's from a designer in Madison. The other is from a game publisher in Madison. So, a great party game is one that is going to allow people to interact, not a lot of stress, not a lot of conflict. There can be some conflict, but it's going to be short. But it's going to be able to draw everybody in. And so this year there's a number of fantastic party games. It's been a pretty good year for party games too. One of the top picks is a game called Snake Oil by Out of the Box, a publisher out of Madison, where one person draws a customer card. So you're a nurse or a caveman or something like that. And then everyone else has hands of cards and they combine two and they create a product that they're going to try and sell you. So if you're going to have a snowblower and then you've got to try and sell it to the caveman and everybody makes their pitch, does their best huckster, and the caveman gets to pick which one makes the most sense for him or her, which is fun. It's a great little mechanic. It's similar in some ways to Apples to Apples, that sort of pitching the person to make the best selection.
So you're kind of appealing to them. You kind of have to know them a
little
bit.
That's right. And so it's a good game to get to know people, but it's also a fun game because you can spin your pitches. If you know the people you're playing with well, you can spin them according to what their favorite teams are or what their pastimes are, what things they hate. The other one, and this is my top pick for party games this year, is ROFL, which is, as you might know, sort of the shorthand for rolling on the floor laughing. And that's the mechanic for this game. You draw a card that gives you a popular phrase, and you try to come up with the shortest abbreviation using letters and numbers and symbols that we would find on a keyboard and get the person to guess the correct phrase. And all the players go through and make up their clues, and then everybody puts down on a board how many symbols and letters they have. And starting at the lowest, the person who's guessing that round will look at each clue. I can do this in three. It's sort of that bidding, name that tune mechanic there. The person who's guessing looks at the lowest and then moves up from there. And the person who created the clue and the person who's guessing get points if they can uncover the actual phrase being abbreviated. The one downside to the game is a lot of the phrases that are used in it are more pop culture references. So if you don't understand "help, help, I'm being repressed" comes from Monty Python, it might not be exactly the game for you. The solution to that is to select the cards a little more carefully. If you don't know what the phrase means or the people you're playing with might not know it, you can always drop it out. You can create your own as well. But between Snake Oil and ROFL, you've got two really fantastic choices for party games.
What about for kids? What's on the docket this year for the kids in our lives who we want to indoctrinate into the games world?
Oh, yes. The trick always for kids' games is to find something that is going to be entertaining for the kids, enjoyable for them, easy to grasp, but not be so repetitive and so boring that the adults playing with them are going to be pulling out their hair after the second or third turn. Not as many really fantastic kids' games this year. There's a number in Europe, I guess, that are in development that have not yet been translated into the U.S. yet. But there are still a few. There's a Zuloretto dice game, which is kind of a variation of the popular board game. And it has players competing their zoos, rolling dice to get the right animals and moving them along. That one's a lot of fun.
And there's one kid game on the list this year that I'm really excited about, Catan Jr.
Yes, there have been a couple of attempts to scale Catan, Settlers of Catan, which is sort of the classic Euro game, the one that really helped kick off a lot of the interest in the United States for these types of hobby games among a wider audience than just people who go to conventions. A couple of times they've tried to scale Catan down to younger kids with mixed success. The version called Kids of Catan is more luck-based than a strategy game, which sort of foils the intent of Catan. But this year they did Catan Jr. and they really got it right this time. So players are swashbucklers sailing around the aisles, building bases. It's a resource management game just like the adult version. So the kids are getting a sense of what that gameplay is like. But it's also not as complex. They've streamlined the rules nicely. It's got pirates and helpful parrots and spooky ghost islands and all sorts of little things like that I think kids are going to find a lot of fun.
What are some of the hobby games that we adults who are really into this are looking forward to this season?
Well, there are several good sort of more involved hobby games. There's one, it's called the Duke, and it's a tile game. It's sort of like chess. Players are moving and battling on a small grid board, and they're using tiles, and the goal is to capture the other player's Duke. And each one of the other tiles that you have has certain movement abilities, and this is all going to sound very familiar from chess. The thing that sets it apart is you only start with three pieces on the board, and after that you're randomly drawing your tiles from a bag. So you don't know what pieces you're going to have. You're not going to be able to set up that strategy 17 moves in because you know how the pawns and everything move. The other tricky part of this is the tiles, and they're really high-quality tiles. This is a well-designed, well-crafted game. The tile movements vary depending on turn. So they have an A side and a B side, and they move one way on the A side. They move a different way and can do different things on the B side. So again, you're not really sure at the start of the game what tiles are going to be in play, and you don't know from turn to turn how those tiles are necessarily going to interact because you're flipping them A to B depending on which ones are moving.
Everything is up in the air. It's chess with multiple moving parts.
Exactly. They've already started releasing a lot of supplements for it to sort of add to the possibilities for the game. They have a Robin Hood supplement that you can add Robin Hood to the mix, and you can add Conan and Solomon Kane. So if you want Conan to go hunting the other player's Duke, you can bring him in. There are also terrain tiles. So once you've played the game a few times and you want to mix things up, you can plunk a mountain down in the middle of the board, and that changes how everything moves as well. So it's not going to be something that's easily grasped by someone looking for a straightforward sort of strategy game, but it's very well designed, and players looking for more of a challenger are going to find this to be a lot of fun.
And you have one more pick for more involved hobby games called Pathfinder Card Game.
The Pathfinder Card Game it's a remarkably successful adaptation of the fantasy role-playing genre to a card game, card-building, deck-building mechanic. It gives players the roles of rogues and wizards and the other standard fantasy sword and sorcery heroic characters. And you go through using the cards in your hand, the cards you gather up from exploring locations, treasures and weapons and armor and spells and things like that, to fight a monster, sort of the boss monster idea again, who also has his own deck where he might have minions and other things that he's going to throw in your path to stop you from defeating him. And the players go through and play through standard fantasy, what used to be kind of Dungeons and Dragons style adventures. There is a Pathfinder role-playing game. We mentioned the beginner box set a couple of years ago as a great gift for role players. And this is kind of an adaptation of all of that to the card game mechanic.
Now, what if you are looking for that more traditional role-playing game?
Well, the Fate system isn't necessarily an introductory role-playing game, but the Fate Accelerated book is really wonderful. It's 48 pages. It's $5. It's everything you need to play that game. That's it, $5. If you have wondered what role-playing games are about, this is a great place to start. This is a nicely designed book. The rules are clear. You don't need a bunch of extra things to play. There are fate dice, which they make special to play with this game, but it explains a couple of pages into this book that you can actually use just regular old six-siders and count them different ways, so you don't even have to go out and buy the fate dice to play this. It's intended as an introduction to role-playing games, and for $5 and at 48 pages, you really can't beat that.
What about for people who are maybe more casual hobby game players?
Tokaido is set in Edo-era Japan, and you're traveling on the road from Edo to Kyoto. And the thing that's terrific about this game is that it's all about the journey. It's sort of the Zen idea of the game of life. Your goal is what you experience as you move along the track. So you want to eat great food. You want to find interesting vistas. You want to meet interesting people. And the person who wins at the end of the journey, at the end of the trip, is the person who has amassed the most points from doing interesting things and meeting interesting people.
Well, of course, Jim, everyone wants to know, what is your top pick this year?
Well, in keeping with the idea that this was a great year for card games, my top pick is a U.S. import of a Japanese card game called Love Letter. And Love Letter has the players, 2 to 4 players, trying to get their words of love to the princess in the castle or the prince. And to do this, they draw cards that represent different people who work in the castle. These are the people who you're trying to get to move along your letter or to foil the other people who are trying to get their letters to the princess. And you play this through a number of hands. You collect up tokens of esteem each time you do manage to get a letter to the princess, and the first player to get 4 tokens of esteem wins the princess's heart. There are only 16 cards total in this game, and the gameplay is remarkably complex despite that. It's got a lot of moving parts. Depending on what cards you're drawing, you can act certain ways. Cards and combinations do certain things if you play them in sequence. So while the game is easy to access and you can be playing this game, the rules are very short, you can be playing this game in about 5 minutes. And the game is available already in 2 different versions, but they both retail for somewhere around $10 to $12.
My favorite part.
So the top pick this year can also double as our stocking stuffer too, because it's a very compact game. The Tempest version comes with a little bag that you can carry everything in. It's really terrific.
Well, Jim Latter, thank you so much for coming in and giving us your 2013 Games to Gift list.
Happy holidays.
James Latter has worked in fiction and hobby game publishing for more than 2 decades. He's the editor of the award-winning anthologies Hobby Games, The 100 Best, and Family Games, The 100 Best. The anthologies feature short essays by the top game designers and publishers from around the world, sharing their personal selections for the most enjoyable and innovative card games, board games, miniatures games, and role-playing games of the last century. Louder's also our resident game expert and annually compiles our list of top games to gift. You can find the full 4th annual list at wuwm.com/lakeeffect. He spoke with Stephanie Lecce. One last break, and then a preview of a much-anticipated a cappella concert at the Riverside Theater tomorrow night. Straight No Chaser when Lake Effect returns on WUWM.